Here are the highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. Visit freetalklive.com for the full episode.
Free speech concerns were raised following the arrests of two University of Connecticut students accused of saying a racial slur. They've led legislators to consider repealing a century-old law that bans ridicule based on race, religion, or nationality. The episode on campus involving two white students in October was recorded on video and sparked protests against racism. Many people applauded their arrests, but civil liberties groups condemned them as an affront to First Amendment rights. Police said the students Jared Carell and Ryan Mukaj uttered the racial slur several times while walking through the parking lot of a campus apartment complex. Just to be clear, there wasn't anyone they were talking to except themselves.
Wow.
So they weren't, you know, spewing these things at another human being. But even if they were, it should still be protected speech.
No, and they were on campus.
Correct. They're in an apartment complex parking lot on campus, recorded by a black student. They say they were playing a game that involved saying offensive words, and it was not directed at anyone in particular. That didn't stop them from being charged under a 1917 law that makes it a misdemeanor for anyone. A misdemeanor, which means up to a year in jail in most places, for anyone who, quote, ridicules or holds up to contempt any person or class of persons. Douglas Spencer added that the state ridicule law, in theory, could be used to arrest comedians who make fun of others. He said, quote, I don't think the old statute would survive a constitutional challenge. But that's the thing. 40 people have been brought up on charges since 2012, and we don't know how many before that.
And how many of them had money for lawyers or even
That's
cared.
That's the thing. You know, as unconstitutional
plea out.
As these things are, you never actually, almost never will somebody fight these charges. Most of the time, as you said, Conan, they will take a plea deal, which means they take a guilty plea. There's no chance after that. Once you take a guilty plea, it's over.
Yep.
You don't get to go back and say, whoops, I messed up. Let's sue constitutionality. Nope. Done deal. Case closed. Sentence given. You got to do what the judge says in that case. And so this happens all the time, whether it be unconstitutional laws like this, or as we saw here in Keene, New Hampshire a few years back when they passed a clearly illegal ban on the synthetic drugs here in town, when it was not illegal at the state level and therefore prohibited for the towns to do that because New Hampshire is not a home rule state.
Yeah, they were like, let's just do it. Let's see what happens.
They actually addressed it in an open city council meeting where...
And the lawyer was like, you guys can't do this.
And they just went right ahead and did it anyway. Yep. And there was no punishment for them. Finally, someone is talking about repealing this.
Yep.
There's a bill in front of the Judiciary Committee right now. However, it's not without its opposition. According to Scott X. Estale of the NAACP and also the State Commission on Human Rights and Opportunities, they have asked the Judiciary Committee to reject the repeal bill, saying, quote,
we, the legislature of Connecticut, has found that in the United States, we are the safe space state of the country, and we want to remain in our status as the safe space of the country.
They didn't call it that in 1917, but that's what they created, or what they were trying to create. And so here's what the commission has to say about it. They say, at a time when hate and bias incidents are on the rise, it's critical that the state not remove these types of prohibitions that aim to deter or punish this unacceptable behavior.
See, it's basically the same thing.
Now, I would be curious to know what the percentage of the population is that supports this law. How widespread is the complete rejection of the idea of freedom of speech?
When you consider when this came about, this law was first brought into existence, you wouldn't think any of that. You wouldn't think the argument was taking place at all. There were lots of crazy racist bigots running around doing their thing 100 years ago. And so just finding that out has already thrown me through a loop.
There's a large number of people who support things like this.
Bunch of babies.
Yeah.
And their argument is, well, we have to have a safe space where the kids can be free from bullies and they can focus all of their attention on learning, and then after that, paying off and drinking.
There's another study from 2015 that's titled "Global Support for Principle of Free Expression, but Opposition to Some Forms of Speech." Americans mm-hmm. especially likely to embrace individual liberties.
Free expression, except A, B, C, D. The list right. just keeps getting longer, and that's the problem. I understand there's some pretty disgusting speech out there. I get it. I know who Christopher Cantwell is. I was at his hearing today. I know the things that he has said. He has said some horrifying things. Christopher Cantwell, former host here on Free Talk Live. We fired him a few years back. I think it's like 5 years ago now at this point.
Really?
Yeah.
Time flies, man.
Yeah, I think he started flipping to racism in like 2015, maybe sometime between 2015 and 2016. But we booted him out the door as soon as we found out that he was a racist here on Free Talk Live.
Didn't you give him some opportunities to...
We wanted him to make right, yeah. We definitely... I didn't want to fire Chris. He was a talented, you know, funny guy.
He's a talker.
Wasn't there a ruling that was in federal court that, for example, you could tell off the police?
Oh, yeah. There's been plenty of rulings.
F you, pig.
Yes.
You know, that kind of thing. Well, what's kind of interesting is... That would be a really interesting case, because wouldn't that be a group of people based on their, you know, creed, profession, you know, that kind of thing?
Well,
those things clearly in opposition to one another, and you'd have federal case law versus, you know, local Connecticut, who cares about.
It's a specious a remark, a hate remark, if you consider pigs all one big family. And I don't think speciesism was on sure. The list.
That's true, yeah.
Pigs could get very offended by that.
But no, Johnson, I think you're right. They could interpret it that way, and they could charge somebody in Connecticut over that.
Right.
But a lot of those cops being told to F off situations, they've been taken to court.
Right.
It doesn't sound like anybody's ever taken these laws to court, because it's right. been around for 100+ years. Yeah. Surely if somebody had challenged it, it would have been overturned.
Well,
by
is
now.
It being enforced? You know, that's
yes.
Yeah. Really?
Oh, yeah.
40 arrests in the last 8 years.
Wow.
With 10 convictions.
Wow.
So, you know, with the other 30, what happened to the other 30? I presume they offered them, you know, like a pretrial agreement. I forget what they call it.
What's the penalty and conviction for this?
Up to 30 days in jail. I don't know if you remember the story, Johnson. The Bradenton Police Department was pulling people over 20 years ago or whatever mm-hmm. it was. And they would pull over somebody for a suspected drug dealer, find a bag of marijuana or cocaine or something like that.
Or a bag of cash.
Or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then they would say, you know, we're going to do you a favor. We could charge you with a felony here, son, but how about you just sign this release form and give us the keys to your car and your title, and we'll let you walk home. Mm. And this was going on left and right.
Right.
And that's the thing. They go after people who can't afford to do anything about it, but luckily they...
Which is everybody.
Right, almost. They hit one guy with this farmer who was like, okay, I'm fighting this. And he went and he threw in whatever resources he had left, because they froze a chunk, good chunk of his money. And he got Institute for Justice on board.
Right.
And they took the case, and they actually did result in a change to the federal law that says that they can only bring a structuring charge now if other illegal activity is involved. So a little bit of good news, but man, how many dozens and dozens and if not hundreds of people and businesses were targeted by this particular law, because most people won't fight. I went to federal court today to watch a lengthy bail hearing. It was actually part two of what started on Thursday, a bail hearing that was two hours and 15 or 20 minutes on Thursday that continued today for just over an hour before finally the judge, or I guess magistrate, which is somehow different from a judge. It's like the lowest level federal judge, basically. Right. She handles bail hearings like this. She took the case, what they call, under advisement. So even after hours of, there was one witness testifying in the earlier portion, and then lots of arguing by the prosecution and the defense, even though the judge had an entire weekend to ruminate on it and look at whatever evidence was proffered to her, she still couldn't make up her mind in court, and she took the case under advisement. She will issue a written ruling about what will happen to Christopher Cantwell, the so-called crying Nazi, the man who made headlines on Vice News and elsewhere out of the Charlottesville protests back in 2017. So let me see, where should I begin with this?
What are the charges?
I believe there's only one charge at this point. There may be more coming, of course, but for the moment, they have him on a charge, and I don't have the exact Okay, I don't have the indictment pulled up here, but basically interstate threats.
Hey, Daily Digest listeners, this is Riley Blake. I enjoy Free Talk Live, and I know you do too, but finding time to listen to an entire episode isn't always easy, so I produce the Daily Digest. I appreciate those of you who have supported me on Patreon and sent Bitcoin to me to thank me for producing these digests. For those who wish to support me on Patreon, visit patreon.com/crblake86. If you wish to send Bitcoin, visit patreon.com/crblake86 for those details. That's patreon.com/crblake86. Thank you.
They, of course, posted some of his offensive things that he said online about that attorney that you mentioned, for instance. They posted some things. And again, not very nice. Not nice things, but no threats, necessarily. And then this guy, of course, he got cross-examined, and the defense did a fairly decent job of changing the narrative, because the narrative from the prosecution is that Chris Cantwell is a danger to the community and he shouldn't be released.
I know. So we've had many conversations about Chris being a master, you know, at pivoting, you know, and,
you know, changing who he is,
changing who he is. So I have a prediction.
Where's he going to go next?
So I know where he's going to go next.
Jesus.
Dare officer.
Oh no.
Do they still
he will be the master of scaring kids straight, because he's got to be like, hey, meth, it's a hell of a drug, you know. It's responsible for me becoming a Nazi. I was
do they still
find upstanding libertarian.
What do they say? Do they meth,
do they still air those programs?
What,
dare?
I don't know.
In schools, I mean, I don't, you know, like, they'll just send him around the country to talk to kids to scare them straight.
It might be his goal. He's like, what can I do? What can I do with all this anger? I want to make money off of this anger. And so he was probably talking to his you know, lawyer, and is like, I got a great idea for you.
He doesn't have a paid lawyer anymore.
We're going to hook you up.
He owes his attorney money.
The guy in the tri-corner hat has moved on.
Cantwell doesn't have a whole history of violence, number one.
Yeah, and he's been in the same spot. For years. He's never let you. After Charlottesville, he came right back.
Came here and didn't do anything for the last few years.
There's also that video of him drawing his gun in Keene to specifically de-escalate a situation.
That's right. And interestingly, they didn't bring that up. The defense didn't bring that up in this particular case. But they did bring up the fact that he is in regular communication with Keene police, which is true. Like, Chris Cantwell has changed how he is about the police. It's one of the things that I thought initially was a good thing, because back before he became a racist, he had this incident with him drawing the gun and defending an innocent girl in the streets who was being attacked by some drunken dude or whatever, and Cantwell had the right to shoot this guy, and he didn't. Because the dude was coming at
it. It does seem likely, though, that as you increase your communication with the police, you're more likely to become a racist.
You think? Why?
Because police tend to be racists.
Could be.
I'm just making a joke about it because, you know, of how, you know, the statistics in crime and arrests.
Well, here's how we really prove it. We find out if Cantwell can handle dogs. Is he a, right, is he a dog hater now?
Well, he's never kicked Jazzy or anything.
Well, maybe you should watch him when he comes around here and send Jazzy into the other room.
The Bull Patrol people. You know, I don't know how many of them there are.
Is this because the shooter had a stupid bowl cut?
The shooter had a bowl haircut, and these people are purportedly fans of his. They support mass shootings. Even Cantwell, as crazy as some of his posts are, has not gone on the record supporting mass shootings. He's spoken out against using violence like that. So these Bull Patrol people were targeting Cantwell. They were calling his show incessantly and crank calling his show. So even within the white nationalist movement, they have people who hate one another and are constantly at each other's throats, and so that's what was going on here. So Cantwell wanted to find out who these people were that were, you know, harassing him and making threats towards him. And so he was trying to find that out, and that's what led to this conversation. He was talking to one of the Bull Patrol people and said, if you don't give me Vic, who was their supposed leader.
He was threatening white national crazy people? And this is what has gotten him in this situation?
Yeah, yeah. The supposed victim the supposed victim of Cantwell's so-called threat to have sex with the man's wife, that man is a member of Bull Patrol.
The whole time I thought he was threatening some upstanding citizen. No. He's threatening other scumbags.
He's threatening people who are actually more scummy than Cantwell.
It's like hey, feds.
Right.
Just let them go at it. Just let them go at each other.
But that's the thing. The feds wanted to raid his house. Even though I don't agree with what he says, I still support his right to say it. And I understand that if we don't stand up for the rights of the most despicable speech, that they're going to come after you eventually.
Cumulative. It builds and builds and builds, and every generation think they can get away with a little more right-taking, taking away of your rights. And before you know it, you're not allowed to stick your tongue at some guy across the street or flick him off or something. Before you know it, that becomes some type of hate speech. That lands you in jail or a big fat fine or gets you fired or gets you kicked out of your school.
We were talking about that in the last hour some young guys in a college in Connecticut are like facing actual misdemeanor charges on a law that's been around for more than 100 years that criminalizes speech. So this is some scary stuff. And you've got to protect the people who say the most offensive things. So I wanted to go to this hearing to see exactly what were they going to argue. They actually ended up arguing that because he uses cryptocurrency, that he's a danger. They used the claim that because he was on secret messaging platforms like Signal and Telegram and used encrypted email, allegedly, that he was dangerous. He's keeping information from the government, even though he's like talking to the police left and right and like trying to show them that he's not a violent person. At one point, this Manchester police officer who works with the FBI, who was doing all the testifying, they only had one witness. It was this one guy who was up there for almost 2 hours. He talks about the secret like messaging services, Signal, for instance, which is an encrypted messaging service, saying they couldn't break into that, right? And he brings up Telegram, which is purportedly a encrypted messaging service, but it's centralized, and Signal's also centralized. They've got servers there too. But the officer said that they can't do anything about Telegram because it's not U.S.-based. So they can't issue a subpoena to Telegram because their servers are outside of the United States. So they can't get the information from Telegram.
Right.
So basically this cop admitted on the stand under oath that Telegram's a dead end for investigative purposes unless you can get the phone of the person who was sending the messages. Mm. And they got Chris's phone. And if they can get into that phone, then they can get access to all your messages in that particular case. So you got to remember, the human element is always the weakest link when it comes to these encrypted messaging systems. So if one side or the other gives up their info to the feds, then they got everything. So let's see. So cryptocurrency, they were saying, oh, and the guy, the police officer who was testifying about Bitcoin, totally did not know what he was talking
about.
This is the
Manchester cop?
Manchester cop who works with the FBI. Didn't know what he was talking about. What he was describing was Monero. The bail conditions. We don't know what they're going to be yet. But the government doesn't want any bail conditions. The prosecution, I mean, they said this guy, he's a danger. He's meth crazed. He's, he says mean things. And he got in a fight once within the last 20 years. So therefore, he must be kept behind bars pending trial on a trial where he's being alleged to have threatened to rape someone's wife when in point of fact, all he said was he was going to have sex with her in front of her children. So it's the entire thing is a complete sham and it's ridiculous and it's a total excuse to go after this guy. Now, again, I don't agree with the things that Christopher Cantwell says. He's a racist, but I think he should be free to say those things. However, when the defense got up, and they started talking about what the bail conditions could be, because again, the government prosecutors don't want any bail conditions. They want them to be kept behind bars. The defense was like, we'll take anything.
House arrest.
House arrest, monitoring.
Put a monitor on his ankle.
Not only monitoring, but they also even brought up the idea that he could be banned from social media posting. So just be clear.
Now, these are public servants. That he has now.
He has public defenders.
Yeah, they're all in the same boat.
Yeah. So, the dude did okay as far as, like, trying to repaint Chris as not a violent person. But he's, like, ready to sell the farm here. He's ready to give it all away. And says to the judge that, judge, you've got all these conditions you could put on, Chris, and we're willing to accept any of them. I'm outside of the courtroom this morning. We're waiting to go in. The doors are locked. I already had an encounter with some rude reporter who was ridiculous, although the AP guy was super cool, and we talked for quite a bit, who was there.
And where was he out of?
He works out of Concord. His name's Michael Casey. If you look up Cantwell, all the headlines about him right now that are being carried everywhere, that's his story. So anyway, there's two cops, obvious cops, right? Because a lot of cops, they got a look to them, right?
Plain clothes?
Plain clothes in this case. But they got a look. So I say to them as they walk up, I say, "Hey, you guys with law enforcement?" And they said, "Yeah." I said, "Well, which agency?" Or whatever. I said something about, "What are your names?" Or which agency? Or something, whatever the next logical question is in that case. And then they realized they stepped
in it.
They'd gone too far.
Stepped in a big
pile
of Ian.
They gave me too much information, and they clammed right up. And they were like, "Well, we don't have to tell you." Really? You don't have to identify yourselves if you're not undercover? Isn't that a thing where, like, if you ask a cop what their name is, they're supposed to tell you? Like, most of them wear name badges.
Were they spectators, or were they there on the job? Were they there on the clock?
I'm sure they were there on the clock.
Well, then in that case, I would say, yeah, they got to tell you. If you've signaled them out, you know.
That's what I thought. Johnson, you were just beginning to tell us about cult jargon. The idea that when you're in a cult, these cults want to differentiate their members. They mm-hmm. want to have a signal that they can use in conversation to use this jargon that will signal to others in the cult that they're in the know.
So let me...
And exclude others from understanding.
Let me first regale the post, which was like a little infographic-y kind of post from this group, Tang Law Mental Health. And they're
Tang Law?
Yeah, I guess. It's just some group that's
like Tang, you drink space.
It doesn't
space
matter.
Tang?
It doesn't matter.
NASA
like law, tang? Like law group, yeah. Like a lawyer?
Still doesn't matter.
Okay.
They posted this like dual, like side by side list of how to avoid toxic positivity. And I'm just like, this is the most SJW garbage nonsense language. So
Wait, and this isn't a troll post. This is real.
Yeah. So they're saying, instead of saying, "You'll get over it," say, "It's hard, but I believe in you." Instead of saying, "Don't be so negative," say, "It's okay to feel bad sometimes." Instead of saying, "Always look on the bright side," say, "It can be difficult to see the good in this situation, but we'll make sense of it when we can." At the University of Tennessee, for instance, administrators are pushing to replace the pronouns him and her with neutral pronouns like z, zim, and zir.
Yeah.
Students at Columbia University want trigger warnings for the classic works by Ovid's Metamorphosis.
Wow.
But a feminist blog protests at that suggestion because the phrase trigger warning itself needs a warning because trigger might cause people to think of guns. At UC Berkeley, students are protesting the teaching of Plato and Aristotle because they were economically privileged white males.
Wow.
The annual production of the Vagina Monologues was canceled at Mount Holyoke because gender is a wide and varied experience that simply cannot be reduced to biological and anatomical distinctions.
That's so funny because isn't the Vagina Monologues kind of like a sort of classically leftist?
It's the traditional feminist, entry point. But they eat their own, man.
Yeah, they do.
And they said, therefore, the show is inherently reductionist and exclusive. A piece that ran in the Harvard Crimson.
It's a fun bunch.
Yeah.
No, I know.
A piece that ran in the Harvard Crimson argues it is tempting to decry frustrating restrictions on academic research as violations of academic freedom. Yet, I would encourage student and worker organizers to instead use a framework of justice. After all, if we give up our obsessive reliance on the doctrine of academic freedom, we can consider more thoughtfully what is just. The thing about sectarian groups is that they don't engage in the marketplace of ideas. Why? Because marketplaces are open places, mm-hmm. and in the open marketplace of ideas, anybody...
You might be challenged.
Yeah. Anybody and everybody can call you out if you're spouting BS. So sectarian groups wall off, so to speak. They develop their own communities, their own bubble, their own closed marketplace, where beliefs are endlessly propagated and never challenged.
Right.
During this process, normal rules of logic and reasoning don't apply.
And if you challenge them, you'll be ostracized. You'll be pushed out of the cult.
Exactly. That's why those rules can't apply. And so what becomes necessitated are new rules, new language. This doesn't mean sectarian groups don't engage with the world, but it's a one-sided engagement. They're not wanting debate. They want conversions. So what are some linguistic instances of how the social justice crowd has acted in this way? What are some words and phrases they use as attempts to control the actions and behaviors of others? Here are a few examples. White passing.
Yep.
I've never heard of this.
I just heard about it this week.
Yeah. When a person who is a part of a minority group voices an opinion that runs counter to the victim narrative peddled by the social justice crowd about said minority group, hence a minority person who challenges such a narrative, is white passing. In a lot of ways, believers in social justice act like fundamentalist Christians.
Yeah.
Privilege is the secular version.
Well, in the same way that a lot of atheists act like the very religious people they hate, because the mm-hmm. atheists, in their maybe rightful rejection of a daddy god, have embraced the daddy state.
Yeah.
Which is just as fanciful.
They, in all essence, they have replaced one god with another.
Right.
And that's how I view this whole climate alarmism. It's just that. And a lot of them are atheists, by the way, and, mm-hmm. and scientists are and all they've really done is exchanged one collection of beliefs and faithisms with another.
Yeah, Gary Freeman. Oh. Gary Freeman in our Discord chat says, "Stop with your liber-splaining."
So there's a, and it's funny that you say in scientists. Well, they're not really, because if someone actually believes in the scientific method, then they don't believe in accepted science. They don't mm-hmm. believe, they believe in the scientific method,
which is
which
another
means
mythology
that
of
every
people.
Single hypothesis must be challenged without end until it is
that's
disproven.
Science. Right.
And the goal is to disprove everything.
Right.
In a lot of ways, believers in social justice act like fundamentalist Christians. Privilege is the secular version of original sin, and to carry it is to carry a total depravity for which you must atone. To be guilty of hate speech, voicing any opinion that strays from the official victim narrative, is the equivalent of being a blasphemer.
Yeah, you can't be empowered with these people as a victim.
In addition, adherents of social justice groupthink are obsessed with sex, particularly in making themselves the puritanesque arbiters of what sexual behavior is acceptable and not acceptable. Like any fundamentalist group, social justice has its reinforcers of thought for those who stray from the narrow path. Mandatory diversity training after a perceived infraction is the most notable Orwellian example of how one can obtain absolution. And finally, as is the case with people in fundamentalist groups, the devout social justice warrior, as they are often called, never gets to be completely assured of their salvation, because there are traps set within the doctrines that make it impossible to follow one without failing another. For example, if you prefer your own ethnicity when it comes to sexual partners, you're a sexual racist. But if you prefer other ethnicities over your own when it comes to sexual partners, you're a fetishist. If you don't believe that gender is a social construct, you're accused of being heteronormative. But if you refuse to believe that transgenderism is a biological reality, you're transphobic. You can't win.
You just heard highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. You can download full episodes, subscribe to our podcast, listen live, and more, all for free at freetalklive.com.